Okay, after the Malachim are finished by Avraham's house, they head over to Sodom, and they go to Lot's house, and so can tell how they take Lot and his wife and his daughters out of the city. And then they're given one instruction. They're told, Himolit al-Nafshecha, run away. Al tabit achrecha, don't look behind you. Val tamar b'chal kikar, and don't stop walking, don't stop running. It sounds like he just means to say, you know, hurry up, run for your life. But they have this instruction, don't look behind you. And then a few psukim later, of course, very famously, v'tabet yishtei me'achrov, v'tahinis av melach. That Lot's wife turned around, she looked, and she turned into a pillar of salt. So, you know, it's a funny story, in a manner of speaking. She turned into a pillar of salt. But what's the idea that because she broke the rule? There was a strict rule, don't look behind you, and she looked behind her, and for that, she got killed. She turned into part of stone. Like, what is it? She got caught on the technicality over here? She violated, she was chayav misa for looking behind her? There's something strange about the story. Maybe Rabbi Reb Kalman Epstein, I heard him talking once about this parasha, and he had a few ha'aris, and they really all go along the same lines. You know, it says that the malachim came, they were prepared to save Lot and his wife, and his two daughters, and their fiancés. His two daughters were both engaged, or whatever, they were, you know, Erisin. They had Chasanim in the city, and he was prepared to save them also. But when he came, when they took the Malachim told Lot, go, you know, Oid Milach Afoy, Chasan, Menachem, Nesecha, go gather them up, take them all out, because we're destroying the city. And the point is that Lot went, Vayetze Lot, Vayedaber El Chasan of Lot Chevenoisab. He spoke to the sons-in-law that were marrying his daughters, and he said, "Kumu tzu min amagam azeki mashkus Hashem asayir." Let's get out of here. God's going to destroy the city. But they thought it was a big joke, so they stayed there. So what happened? They got killed. Now Hashem was prepared to save them. If it was merit-based, so Hashem was prepared to save them, but they didn't want to come along, so they got killed. There again, it seems a little bit like, so why are we killing them? They're killed because they didn't want to come along. I mean, because they thought it was a joke. It did sound like a joke, if you ask me. Right, that Hashem is coming to overturn the city. It sounds a little bit like a joke. One can hardly blame them for thinking that it was a joke. I'm not saying that was an appropriate reaction, but that's what they're chayav misa for. What it sounds like, you see, is that there's a very big emphasis on are you going or you're not going? As if it's not merit-based. It's put aside the question of do you deserve to be saved, do you not deserve to be saved? Are you going or are you not going? Which, again, it's not a kasha. I mean, Stein was being overturned, so you have to not be there in order to be saved. But you'd think that if Hashem, you know, if he wanted to save them, if he was prepared to save them, so there are miraculous ways of saving them, he could have picked them up and thrown them out. Right? Hashem could have, if let's say, no way that Sodom is going to be saved, but I want to save these two sons-in-law, Hashem could have pressed eject and have them thrown out of the city. But no, they had to decide on their own that they're leaving, and if they didn't decide on their own they're leaving, then they're killed for that. And then the pasuk says that as the morning was, you know, the dawn was breaking, kamoy hashachar Allah. So by yitzu ha-malachim b'loit lemer, the malachim were hurrying him, and they say, "Come on, hurry up! You gotta get out of here. Come kachas ishtachav vayismama," and he delayed. Vayachziko anashim biyodai. So the men grabbed his hand. Vayarishta vayashdevenoisav. The Lot was delaying. The Malachim said that no, you have to. They hurried him. The hurrying didn't work. They grabbed his hand. The Pesukim, I'm dramatizing how it all revolves around whether they're going to be there or they're not going to be there. It was urgent to get them out. The Malachim had a job. The Malachim's mission was to save light. And you see how there was tension. The Malachim, they almost failed. They needed to try their best to save light, but in order to save light, they had to get him to leave. If light wasn't going to be willing to leave, then he wasn't going to be saved. Now, okay, so those are a few ha'arais in the parasha, all along the same line. At the end of the parasha, it says, after the pasuk says how light was destroyed, Vayhi b'shachas alekim es ari akikar, that when Hashem destroyed all those cities, Sdeim, Amira, and Adma, and Svayim, and the fifth one, Vayizkar alekim es Avraham, Hashem remembered Avraham, Vayishalach es light v'techa afecha, and he sent light, he spared light, he saved light from this whole overturning. In this pasuk, the pasuk makes it quite clear that the saving of light was an act of kindness to Avraham. Vayizkar alekim es Avraham, Vayishalach es light v'techa afecha. Hashem remembered Avraham in that he sent light away. So the way that Rav Kalman was masbir, what all of these psukim taken together seem to suggest is that light, clearly he wasn't being saved on his merits. Right? That's clear. He was being saved because he was part of Avraham Avinu's family, and Hashem had Rachmanus on Avraham Avinu. So he said, I don't want your family to get killed when I destroy the cities, so I'm going to save light. But there was something that light had to do also. And that was a question of identification. He had to identify as being part of Avraham's family. He was, like all of us are, a member of multiple circles. He was part of the Beis Avraham. That's one of his circles, right? Chanukah parties, simchas, l'rayas. You know, he went to family events for an Avraham's family. He's also part of the city of Stein. The other sorts of parties, not Chanukah parties. Whatever the social life was in movie night in Stein. Right? Movie night he did with Stein, not with Beis Avraham. There's different. He was a member of both circles. And now there was a conflict because the circle, the Eda called Stein, was going to be destroyed. And the circle called Beis Avraham, the Eda of Avraham, was going to be saved. And all the people that had these overlapping affiliations, they needed to decide, who am I really? Who am I going to identify with? Push comes to shove, am I more a part of Sodom or am I more a part of Beis Avraham? And for the Chassanim, it was a joke. They grew up in Sodom, they lived in Sodom, their parents were Sodom, their brothers were Sodom, their sisters were Sodom. They weren't even married, but they had a fiance who was a great niece of Avraham Avinu. They're like, wow, for that I'm responsible for the people, and now I'm part of Beis Avraham? Give me a break. I have a tenuous connection with Avraham and my whole life is Stein. I'm Stein. Okay, if you're Stein, that's it. You're finished. For all the others did identify with Avraham Avinu. It was a real part of who they were. They had lived their whole life as the nephew, the nieces, the great nieces of Avraham Avinu. They had spent time with him. And when they were called upon to identify who are you, it was a real struggle. The Malachim were hurrying them, and they were delaying. They couldn't really bring themselves to pull the trigger and say, "I'm not part of Stein. That's not my real identity. I'm really more part of Beis Avraham." It was very tough. Lamai said they had been living there for some time, and they had friends there, and they were, things that they were associated with in Stein, and to break their tie with them and say, no, that's not who I am. This is who I am. It's very hard. But b'chemlas Hashem alav, the Malachim pushed them. They did enough. You know, if they would have said no, we're part of Sadaim, so the Malchim would have said, okay, fine, we can't help you. But once they were at least vacillating, so they got credit for that. They were vacillating, so then the Malchim said, okay, we'll do the rest. So they grabbed their hands and they pulled them away. You're at least clearing to be more Avram than more part of Avram's Ada than Light's Ada. So, okay, that's enough to be saved. We'll take you out. But don't turn around. Don't say, we're going to help you make the break. You can't decide if you're going to make the break or you're not going to make the break. We're going to help you. We're going to grab your hand and we're going to pull you away from Sadaim. And then already you're running with momentum, then already you should feel like you're based off Ram. And you're not still part of Adas Sadaim. But the Ashes Light still couldn't make the break. Even as she was running, she was still looking over her shoulder. What's the Pshat looking over her shoulder? Pshat was, no, maybe that's where I belong. Maybe I'm really more Sadaim. After all, she only married and she wasn't born in. She was thinking, this decision that the Malchim just made for me, does that really reflect? Is that really my decision? Deep down, do I really want to be part of Beis Avram more than part of the Ir Sadaim? No. I feel more like I'm part of Sadaim. If you're more like part of Sadaim, then Batihin is a Malach. Because that was what it was all totally on. How do you identify? Do you identify with this Ada or do you identify with that Ada? By turning around, she was showing that even after all of the help the Malachim gave her, she still couldn't really bring herself to say, I don't identify with that Ada, I identify with this Ada. So that's why she was included in the destruction of Sadaim. This makes the whole, you read this parasha about Sadaim being destroyed and getting the cities getting overturned and Ashes Light turning into an Etziv Melach, and it seems almost like a fairy tale in terms of its applicability to me and you, to our lives. But with this backdrop, with this subplot that's going through it, this is all very, very negay, halacha l'maisa. This is, I mean, every one of us, we, today even more than ever, we all are part of multiple circles. And that's okay, that's a part of life. You're part of a family, you're part of a shul, you're part of a yeshiva. You're also part of, you have other affiliations and connections and groups that you're connected to. And we all live like that. We have multiple circles, and there's certain overlaps between the circles and certain areas where they're very separate. But what the story of Sadaim comes to tell us is that a person has to have a very clear picture of who he is really, of how he really identifies. And the danger, there's a danger in these other affiliations, because if they become your core identity, then you're finished. Depending on what it is, you could have very neutral, harmless kinds of identities. I'm Jewish. I'm also a New Yorker, and I'm also an American. Okay, that's all fine. But I think where this often comes into play in a challenging way is when it comes to being a fan. In America, in the world nowadays, that's a very, very strong sense of identity. People identify very much if they're a fan of a sports team, if they're a fan of a politician, which is really also just sports, the game, if they're a fan of a music group or artist, that becomes a very strong part of their identity. And that already is dangerous, because in many cases, you could probably say in most cases, maybe one can even say in all cases, but okay, maybe that's debatable. But in many cases, these are not really identities that are appropriate for us. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't admire the way they play ball, you can't admire the way they sing. There's a separate question that we could have about whether there are Yisurim involved in that, there aren't Yisurim involved in that, maybe sometimes yes, sometimes not. But aside from that question, if you're into it and you're a fan, so it becomes part of your identity and your group identity, becomes very much enmeshed with the with the fanhood of this, let's say, artist, musician. And in many cases, that's already a very negative association. That's an identity that could often be antithetical to being a Ben Torah. But sometimes we don't realize it. I am a Ben Torah. I'm davening. I'm learning. I also consider myself part of that group called the fans of such and such a singer, musician, artist, whatever. And that group, if you look at them as a group, it's you know, stoim on steroids sometimes. But and the malachim and the malachim are pulling you. They're saying you have to choose. You know, not always. You know, in our case, not because the alternative is instant destruction. That, you know, we don't live in a world like that nowadays with instant destruction. But if you're affiliated with a group because of your, you know, fanhood and your loyalties, that, you know, whose values, whose ways of conducting themselves are very, very anti-Torah and mitzvahs, that means that you, to some degree, identify with anti-Torah mitzvahs. You have to break those, you know, so there's a, this parish is machayev us, that you have to break those identities. That means not necessarily that you always have to, you know, not be a fan, but you have to be very careful that you're not letting those interests become an identity. It could be an interest, again, then there's always the other question of it doesn't involve Yisroel, doesn't involve Yisroel. You know, if it involves a serum, then you can't. But even if it doesn't, so you can maintain the interests, but you have to make sure that you're really part of the Adas Avraham Avinu, not part of the Adas Adonai.
Go ahead. I don't know, following sports, there's always something like...